Touchdown Duisburg, der Rhein-Fire-Podcast von Radio Duisburg mit Julia Wegner.
Willkommen zurück bei Touchdown Duisburg. Ich bin Julia Wegner und heute gibt's mal was ganz Neues, nämlich eine Folge nur auf Englisch. Und damit die Folge aber trotzdem für alle zugänglich ist, habe ich mir was überlegt. Und zwar bekommt ihr zu der Folge auf Englisch ein Transkript auf Deutsch, also die Audiodatei in Textform gebracht. Der Gedanke ist, dass ihr dann parallel zum Hören der englischen Folge auf Deutsch mitlesen könnt. Dafür findet ihr in der Folgenbeschreibung einen Link zu einem Google Drive Dokument. Da ist der deutsche Text drin. Ich hoffe sehr, dass das so funktioniert, wie ich mir das vorstelle. Aber zurück zur Folge, warum machen wir die überhaupt auf Englisch? Ja, das hat einen sehr guten Grund. Ich habe mich nämlich mit dem neuen Headcoach von Rhein-Fire, Mark Ridgely, unterhalten und wollte einfach mal wissen, was für ein Mensch er so ist. Deswegen in der heutigen Folge keine Football-Politik, sondern persönliche Fragen und Einblicke von Mark in seine Zeit in der NFL. Und wenn ihr euch fragt, warum ich wie eine deutsche Kartoffel auf Englisch klinge, dann liegt es daran, dass ich eine deutsche Kartoffel bin und jetzt viel Spaß beim Hören.
Hi Mark, thanks for being here today.
Danke, thank you for having me.
Danke, your German is coming along.
Day Good. By day.
Please tell me, how did you get into football in the first place?
At a very young age. I remember the first football that I got. It was a San Francisco 49ers football that my dad got from credit card points. And that was probably when I was about 5 years old. First Super Bowl I remember watching is the Cowboys and the Bills back in the early 90s. So I grew up watching it. Obviously in America, football is viewed very highly. It is a sport that is well televised. Everybody consumes it. And so I started watching at a young age. I started playing probably when I was about 9 or 10 years old, a youth football league. And so kind of worked my way up from there. Was always a fan of the game. And then as far as coaching, that didn't really come around until the end of my college days. I tell people my story personally is I went to school to be a dentist and I came out and I was a football coach. And by the grace of God, you know, he's just continued to open doors up for me on my coaching journey. And here I am now in Germany with the Rhein-Fire.
Okay, you've got some NFL experience and in general a lot of experience in the States in football. What did you learn the most from your time in the States or in the NFL?
I think every job, every season, every day, to be honest, there's learning opportunities there. Probably the most important is the people. I've been blessed to be around fantastic coaches, but more importantly, fantastic people. Great men, great husbands, great leaders. Who took me under their wing, and that was a cool part of the process, and that was something else I saw in the NFL that was neat, where you had veterans in a locker room that would take a rookie in, a guy that's trying to take their job, and yet here they are trying to help them improve. There's a sense of serving and a sense of humility in regards to somebody opened this door, helped me in the past, and now I'm doing that for you, and I feel like that's a big purpose of myself today.
Okay. What would you say were the most like important steps or stops in your career? Like what shaped you, what influenced you a lot in the way that you're coaching today?
Like I said, I think everyone had its own purpose. Early on at the University of Pittsburgh, we were surrounded by a lot of professional coaches, NFL coaches. Dave Wansed was the head coach there. He was a defense coordinator with the Dallas Cowboys in the 90s, won a Super Bowl, head coach in Miami, and also with the Chicago Bears. He was the head coach at the university during my years there. And then that staff as a whole, I tell people the story. I think there was 14 guys on the staff in 2009, and I think in 2012, 11 of them were in the NFL. Like, it was instant promotions to that. Yeah. And that was all, again, just great people that were willing to help us and open that door for us. But early on, it's funny because I'm working with some young coaches here, and you remember those days in regards to, man, I don't know any football. You think you know football, and then you get in a room with a guy that's coached for 30 years, and it's like, what is this guy even talking about? And so for me, communication is a big part of that. You know, that's one of the biggest lessons I've learned throughout all this. But after the journey at the University of Pittsburgh, I ended up at Central Michigan, which was my first time moving away from home. I grew up in the Pittsburgh area. And so I got to Central Michigan, and I'm on my own. I'm about 24 years old, and you're learning a lot about life, too. So those things go hand in hand. I'm a big believer, and I preach it to our guys. You know, who you are off the field matters, and that's going to help who's on the field. So make sure, you know, you take care of yourself off the field. But during those seasons in Central Michigan, that's where, you know, my faith really started to bloom personally. And then even after I left there, this is another part of my story, but I graduated, had my master's, I moved back home. I could not find a job. I applied to a lot of very small schools. I could not even get a call back. That was a very humbling season for me. But I was back home with my wife. She was, we were dating at the time for about 6 weeks. So I moved back to Pittsburgh for about 6 weeks, was at home. I was cutting grass and painting fences for $20 an hour. Next thing you know, in June, I got a call, changed my life. And that was the one that gave me an opportunity to go coach in the NFL. And that was a hard transition for me too, because I had a special teams defense background. And then next thing you know, you're working with the head coach, North Turner, who was also the offensive coordinator. Phillip Rivers is a quarterback. Again, you walk in there and I have that same feeling. I don't know any football, right? But the reality is my perspective was just different, right? I saw the game from the other side of the ball, which that gave value now to these coaches as well. And that's, I'm a big believer, iron sharpens iron. So just my perspective, my experiences, how can I use them to help these guys? And that was a cool lesson I learned early on with the professional players. If you can help them in any way, and sometimes it's just getting them to see things a little differently, that helps advance their career, and that's a way you can build trust with them. But that's the uniqueness of all coaches, because we all have different backgrounds mm-hmm. and different places and different people that we've worked with. It's cool to have Coach Wade Harmon here and some of the other guys because of their experiences as well. But I think that's a common theme. You know, if you work in the NFL, you'd be amazed by the people. It's an incredible thing. So, and then during my time there, there's three head coaches, obviously a lot of turnover every year in the NFL is a lot of turnover. But one of those guys I met, in 2018 was Rip Shear. And ironically enough, he was out here last week visiting. He came by to practice. It was good to see him and his wife, Michelle, but he was the one that got me in with, coaching in Madrid. And so, yeah, it's a unique story. It's a cool story. I'm blessed that I get to share it, but all these guys, you know, if you talk to them, it's neat.
Okay. I think it's a really cool story. And also I think it's kind of cool that you're a big believer in many ways, because I think sometimes you just need like one person who believes in you.
Amen.
Yeah. And Amen. Then, yeah, opens doors.
Yes, it does.
And yes, now you're
does.
Here.
Yes, it does.
In Europe, I mean, you've gained some experience in American football in Europe before with the Madrid Bravos and the Enthroners. What would you say is the biggest difference between American football in the States and in Europe?
So that was a big perspective thing for me as well. I always say, you know, I was coaching at the highest level. Next thing you know, I'm out on the streets because that's that business. I get fired and I'm out of football completely for about 3 years. Pursued some other passions. My wife and I, we had our second child during that time. I really just focused on my family, you know, self-development mentally, you know, physically, spiritually. And for me, it was that progression through that. I wasn't sure if I was even going to get back into coaching. So my perspective, again, at the highest, now completely out. When I got that call from Rip to go join him in Madrid, I had a very open perspective in regards to, I didn't have any expectations. I tell people, I think expectations is a dangerous word, because you either set them too high and you fall short, or you set them too low and you don't get to where you should be. So I went into that with a very open mind. The one thing I learned in Spain was, like, these guys love playing football. People in Europe love playing football because in the States, everything is money driven. I hate to say that. There still is a purity and a passion to it at the youth levels. But even now, I mean, they're recruiting kids 13, 14 years old, and it's a different world. But over here, it was amazing to me. In Madrid, they had a team, the Black Demons. It was both male and female tackle football, which was new for me. They had to pay to play football, which was incredible to me as well. And again, football's not popular here, or not that popular, or at least not as popular in Spain. And so that was a big thing. Again, just, you know, how do you help these people? But during my time out, another thing that I think really helped me with the transition coming to Europe was I started running football camps for youth. And so I was working with like 8 to 11, 12 year olds. And so you learn, I have to communicate differently, right? Their understanding of the game is much different. And it's just all those pieces that, same thing, you come over here, you got American players that have played in college and have even been in some camps. And that was cool too, you know, getting a chance to meet the Americans. We had guys that had played in Europe prior, so you can learn from them and you see their role specifically too, because they have a very important role on every team. But then also, you know, who are the imports and who are your best homegrowns, and, you know, who does everybody kind of navigate and migrate to? How does this work? You know, who's the strength and the voice of these teams? But yeah, it's that was awesome. I gotta be honest, that year was so much fun for me. And again, it was just a blessing in many ways, but we really enjoyed coaching, playing together. That's why a lot of the coaches, you know, are here today, because you build those relationships that are lifelong. And so that was kind of my season there. And being a special teams coordinator, being the defensive line coach there, you know, a different role. But special teams coordinators, I always tell people, next to the head coach, special teams coordinator and strength and conditioning coaches, those are the only other coaches that get to talk to the whole team. And so that to me was a way that, you know, it was cool for me to, again, you know, see how my communication skills were, to see what I needed to improve on. And then that obviously helped me when I got to Hungary. Biggest lesson I learned in Hungary, and it's one that I preach to our guys here, 90% of our problems can be solved with communication. But we either don't want to have the conversations, they're hard conversations or difficult conversations, but I believe, and I learned this in the NFL, the truth will always prevail. So be truthful with guys, be honest with guys. They don't have to like it, but they can accept that. Don't try to, you know, water this down or you know, sugarcoat it, as we would say. Just be truthful with these guys. If it's good enough, tell them it's good enough. If it's not good enough, tell them it's not good enough. But I think one thing in the States is, like, it's such a high bar that, like, nobody ever knows what's good enough, because people expect perfection. Well, nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes, myself included. And I tell our players that all the time. But how consistent can you be? So those are some of the lessons that I've learned throughout my journey, but specifically over here. The other thing, communication, some people laugh, but like the language, right? That's a real thing. Words are important. Words are very sure. important. And so what you say, how you say, you know, the specific words you use, you have to be very cognizant or very thoughtful in regards to what you speak.
I get it totally. I think in the end, it always comes down to the simple phrase, communication is key,
as you would say. I like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in every aspect of life, if it is, I don't know, a relationship, a marriage, or like a work relationship, or playing football, coaching a team, if you're disrespecting your players or somebody, they're going to disrespect you. And so...
Doesn't work very well on a team.
Yeah.
Nope.
Got it. Well, I mean, you know... football is the biggest in the States, in America, but Europe is trying to get there, and Germany as well. What does it take for football to grow even more here? Is it the money in the end, or?
I think it's a multitude of things. Something that brings me back is I do have hope and belief that, hey, it is growing here. If you look at the current climate and what's going on, I know this past season with the ELF falling out, new leagues, new teams, this, that, and the next, it doesn't give a lot of hope. But there are a couple of factors I think are really helping the growth over here. You look at something like I think about the Super Bowl, right? And the coordinator there, who has, he's from the UK, right? That's one story. There was just a guy came out the other day, Arthur Kingdom, who signed with UCF in college. There are going to be more opportunities for guys here, especially young guys, to go play in the States. And what a great opportunity. I tell people, if you watch the Olympics, there's big, tall, fast people all over this world. And these people are now starting to play football, too. And so I really think it's about a connection, a pipeline. How do we get these guys recognized? And that's where playing football on this stage offers a platform for guys to get opportunities with that. But there's a couple other factors in my mind that I really think are helping. The 2028 Olympics with flag football coming into that, flag football has exploded. To me, the NFL is the best business marketing, if you ever want to study businesses, because they always find solutions to their problems. Flag football found a solution to a lot of their problems, and now they can promote it, and now they can run with that into the 28 Olympics, which aren't too far off. And then the other thing is, too, if you look at the money from the NFL that's getting put into the games being played in Europe, they're playing more and more games every year, not just in Europe, too. This is global. This is globalization. This is how, you know, you take a domestic company and you turn it into a global company, no different than, you know, Nike or Volkswagen or, you know, Mercedes, whatever you want to talk about, all those things. It's that to me helps. Because it does cost a lot of money, you know, to run a football team. There's a lot of pieces with that. Travel's not cheap. Hotels aren't cheap. And you want to have a quality product that attracts guys to play. And that's where it's patience, and it's taken a little longer than some guys would want. But I can't wait to see, you know, where football is going to be in 5 or 10 years. I think people are going to be amazed that it has grown so quickly, and also that there's so many players from outside the states that are now playing at Division I colleges and or in the NFL and beyond.
Yeah, the Olympic Games 2028 with flag football. I think it's great. We have a flag football world championship in Düsseldorf in Germany this year. Do you know about this?
I do now.
Okay.
When is it?
This summer, I think. Awesome. August, like mid of August.
Well, if we don't have a game or practice, I'm going to try to check some of that out.
Yeah,
the sport's a little different, but it's exciting.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, so it's one of those things. Again, it's a great entryway. You know, not everybody wants to play tackle as a young person. There's obviously health and safety things too that are of paramount. That are important things. So. That, to me, it's a great gateway into the game, because to me, I tell people football is the greatest representation of life. There's not a better sport. The teamwork, the camaraderie, the selflessness, you know, what you have to do, putting a little bit of yourself aside to work to achieve a greater goal. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, for sure. And also, just for the kids, we have a lot of youth and kids programs now, like for the last maybe 5 years, they've been building in Germany, all of those, so kids just can play flag football.
Yeah.
And we haven't had that like maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago. So when I went to school, which is like this year, it's 7 years ago. Yeah. When I went to school, we didn't have any of it. Yeah. We had soccer and that's it.
Yeah.
So nothing more.
I hear that from a lot of guys.
And honestly, I think the best thing I ever saw in football, except the Miami Dolphins butt punt. I love that video so much. But I think the best thing I ever saw was a two-year-old playing football or trying to play football and just running around. They have like really like 2, 3, 4-year-olds running around and trying to play football. And it's the cutest thing you're ever going to see.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. It's a little easier for them to hold a football and run around than to kick a ball, soccer, yeah. Or dribble a ball like basketball. But yeah, those are neat to see. And again, I think flag football provides an opportunity for a lot of people.
For sure. Well, back to you and Rheinfire, and you as a head coach. What's most important to you as a head coach?
The people. People. I'm here to serve these guys. I love them. I tell them that every day. They go out there, they sacrifice their bodies, they sacrifice their time. It's not for money. They do it because they love the sport, they love each other, and they want to play and go win a championship. That's why I'm here.
Okay. I do have a few questions on the more personal side. Nothing too crazy.
I'm an open book.
So. Okay, that's good. Just because football can be very demanding. It takes a lot of time. It's emotional. How do you manage to balance your professional life with your personal life?
The hours here are much different than they were in the States. To be honest, that was something that was a struggle for me towards my last couple of years in the NFL. My daughter's 6 years old now. She was born in 2019 in season. And so those first couple months of her life, you know, tied up with work, the hours people wouldn't even believe, you know, if you told them, not to mention the travel, 100 plus hours a week, and then you're not there on the weekends. It doesn't leave a lot of time for family time, especially with a newborn at home, you know, and a wife who's in essence a single mother when the dad's at work all the time. As great as that life is, as great as that sport is, there's a sacrifice you have to make, you know, to coach at that level. And then the following season was 2020, the COVID year. That was my last year coaching with the Chargers. And that 6-7 months, I remember looking at pictures of my daughter in August, and we're in January of the following year, and I don't even recognize her. And I'm ashamed to say that, but it's the truth, because you're at work, and the weeks fly by. They go fast here too, but that's where, again, coaching over here has provided a lot more balance for me personally. Yeah. The hard part for me is my wife teaches, and my oldest is now in kindergarten, so they're going to finish out the school year. They'll be done about the beginning of June, and then they'll have all summer off, so I'm looking forward to getting them out here soon. But that is a challenge, and not just them, but too, you know, our family, both her and mine, are in Pittsburgh in the area. And so we lived in California for, I was there 9 years. I think she was there for 7. You're away from your parents, you know, aunts, uncles, cousins, friends, family. It's a huge sacrifice. And so to me, anytime we get with our family, it's important. And that's where it's been neat to coach over here, because it's been seasonal in regards to, hey, come over in April. Here through, you know, August, maybe September, get a chance to go back and spend time with loved ones.
Okay. What helps you switch off after a long day of work?
I mean, if I'm tired enough, I go to bed, but I try to start my day in a word. I just think that's a good place to get grounded. You know, that's a practice and a habit. I encourage everybody, regardless of your beliefs, I think, you know, you have to have something that keeps you grounded. Life brings ups and brings downs and everything in between. So that's usually a place I go to, not just in good times, but also in tough times and places where I need some company or I need some peace. That's usually where I go first. Another thing I think is helpful too is being around other people, being around other coaches. That's something that's been great here. I know my family's not here, but I think isolation is one of the worst things for you, you know, especially if you're struggling. And that's, it happens to injured players. I tell them this all the time, like, don't isolate yourself. A team has a way of isolating injured players because it's like, well, you're hurt, you're not here, but you're still part of this. And that's hard because, again, you work so hard, you sacrifice so much to be here, and then you feel like an outsider. And so to me, those are the big things. It's the faith. And then, you know, what other pieces and what other people do I have around me now? So I try to stay busy with as much football as I can now. Cause again, when my family gets here, it's a new balance of time.
Okay. You talked about ups and downs. What keeps you motivated during tough moments in your career, your family and friends, or just the passion for the sport itself?
That's a great question. My faith, I think I found purpose in football through my faith. And I think that's something that motivates me now. I hate to say this, but when you're younger, right, external things motivate you, you know, money, power, position, you know, the things that those bring are motivators. But then once you have them, you realize, hey, what else do you have? Well, I search for joy and I search for peace in my heart. And that comes from one place. So to me, it really is that regrounding, that rebalancing. Every morning you wake up, I give thanks to the Lord. Just say, hey, thank you for a new day. What do you want me to learn today? I know yesterday's past. I can't do anything about that. I know tomorrow's not guaranteed. So my ability to stay focused on the present is big. And that's something I try to share with our guys too. You know, I think the best teams are able to just focus on that play, right? And then good, bad, and different, you get another play. Well, and then another one. And so your ability to reset, just like every morning, you know, you wake up, can you reset regardless of what has happened to you, regardless of what's going on in your personal life? I think those are opportunities where you can just say, hey, I'm going to start again and I'm going to keep pushing forward to be better than I was yesterday.
That's a really nice answer.
Thanks.
If you ever have a day off with no football at all, what does that day look like for you?
Well, the cool thing about coaching here is it's spring into the summer, so the weather's usually pretty good. I think the Rhine River is beautiful, so luckily I live pretty close to it, so I try to walk by that when I can. The weather for practices this year has been awesome. Let's get sidetracked. I know your question wasn't about practices.
No worries.
Like, I don't know what springs are normally like here in Germany. The winter back home in Pennsylvania was brutally cold, a lot of snow, and so I think anything warmer would have made me happy. But like, if you just go outside this time of the year and you look around, like the flowers are blooming, yeah. Everything's so green, the sun is shining, like it's just, it's hard not to be in a good mood, yeah. Let me put it that way. So I try to go for walks, I try to go work out. Right now, again, there's not a lot of days off because I don't want to say I try to consume myself, but I try to keep myself occupied with football. Also with a new staff, with new people, you have to spend time together, you have to get to know each other, again, not just as coaches but on a personal level. So I've been spending a lot of time with the offensive guys, defensive guys, special teams coordinator. Like, those are things I think that are important, that way we can understand each other a little bit better once the season gets started. But yeah, I love reading. That's another passion of mine. Okay. So if the weather's good, I'm outside walking, checking something out here, because it's awesome. That's part of Europe too that I love. But yeah, if not doing that, I'm probably reading something.
Honestly, sounds great.
Very simple. Very simple.
Yeah, but I love it. Just sitting in the sun with the river and water flowing beside you and reading a good book. Honestly, couldn't be better.
There's something about that water. I thank the Lord. I always say it's like healing pool, but like somehow, some way, I got in Michigan, there's a lot of lakes there. Mm-hmm. And so you could go to the lake. And then I lived in Southern California in San Diego on Huntington Beach. And I was fortunate enough to be next to the Pacific Ocean. When I got let go there, my wife and I moved to Florida. We bought a house in Venice on the Gulf Coast. And so we had the water there, and even in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, Three Rivers, that's where the city is. It's just something about it. It's therapeutic. And so Madrid was tough because there wasn't a lot of water around Madrid, but even in Hungary, you know, there was a lake by my house, Lake Valencia. And then, yeah, so those are cool things for me personally. And then, you know, you end up here and, sure enough, like I said, I get to look out and see that beautiful river every morning. So it's awesome.
Nice. I mean, you probably know, but the German in me has to say it once, never ever swim in that river.
I asked Rohat that question okay, very
never,
early on.
Ever.
He said, no, you'll drown.
Yeah,
he goes,
you're
I don't care
die.
How good of a swimmer you are. I might put my feet in from the shore, but I know not to go past
yeah.
that.
Yeah, honestly, never ever go in there. It doesn't really matter how good of a swimmer yeah. you are. You're just going to drown.
The currents and everything, yeah.
Yeah. But I do miss, I grew up with a really small river right in my town, and we went swimming there in the summer, and you could just go in and float around like maybe
awesome.
100, yeah. And I do miss that living yeah. here now, because we don't really have that. We only have like one lake where it's allowed to swim, and then there's like, it's like a fake lake.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called, but like fake beach and fake lake, fake fake water.
Well, you need to get back home then, or go back to the old river.
Yeah, I'm going to go on next week, but it's probably too cold to go for a swim.
cold water will change your life. Cold water will change your life.
Well, I like to do the, after like the sauna, go into the cold water.
Yeah. Contrast.
I want to go to Finland once in my life, or like the Scandinavia, Norway and stuff, and just do the sauna and then lay in the snow.
I think
it might change my life. But
it will.
Anyways, what's something people would be surprised to learn about you? What's something we don't know?
I got a couple. First one that came to mind, I wear my socks inside out. I don't know, that might be a weird thing, but that's one thing that I don't know if people want to know that. But that's one thing. The other thing to me, you know, as much as I love football, my passion is life. My passion and purpose is life. So I'm always looking for, you know, ways to help others. And again, I think some of that has just been the blessings I've had in my own life in regards to people reaching out, helping me when they didn't need to, being kind to me when they didn't need to. That changes your life too. And so for me personally, that's something I think that, you know. And then outside of that, it's like, I love business. I love finance. I love real estate. I have passions outside of football. I think, again, we get associated with, well, you're a football coach. No, I'm a Christian first. I'm also, you know, a husband. I'm also a father. You know, I'm a lot of things. But those things to me, those would be probably, again, I don't know if they want to know about my socks, but.
But I really
that's
like that
unique
fact.
Yeah, unique fact. No, there's a movie. There's a movie I watched when I was young, and they describe, you know, if you think about a sock, right? It has all the seam and all the fuzzy stuff's on the inside. And yeah. if you turn your socks inside out, try it. You probably won't go back, because you're like, man, these actually feel better this way. So
wow. Maybe I need to try. What
don't,
movie?
Don't knock it until you try it is okay. what we would say. Don't knock it until you try it. That's another thing, you know, the older I've gotten. And it's funny, because I'm trying to teach my daughters this. Just try new things. And it's something mm-hmm. I tell our players all the time too. You know, try new stuff. That's what practice is for. Everything you do is not going to be perfect. But what works for one player to the next, you know, that's another thing. It's always going to be different. So use those to try new things. Same thing, whether it's foods, whether it's drinks, whether it's whatever. You never know what you might find that you like.
Yeah, I like that. There's one last thing I want to do in this episode, and it's called fire questions. it's just a bunch of short questions, yep. and you just answer instinctively. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Favorite moment of your career?
That's like asking me my favorite child. I mean, the first thing that came to my mind, 13-9, when I was at the University of Pittsburgh, we beat West Virginia. They were the number two ranked team in the country at the time in college football. We were 28.5-point underdogs, which meant we had no business winning that game. We won that game on the road. We also won a game in Kansas City and also in Pittsburgh when I was with the Chargers in 2018 that are lifelong memories for me. I hate to say this is hard to say on this podcast, but, you know, the game in Madrid here against Ryan, that was a special game for me. The game against Berlin last year in Hungary, too. You know, after that season that we persevered through, to have those guys taste that success, that was awesome. But those would be a handful.
Okay. One player or coach who shaped you?
Same. I mean, I have so many people to single out one. I don't think that's fair to anybody. One guy who really, really I have so much love and respect for was Anthony Lynn. He was head coach, my third head coach with the Chargers. I learned so much from the other two head coaches, but Anthony Lynn was a man of faith, and he really brought that to the football team. And that was the first time I felt like, hey, you know, you can bring this into the team, and it's actually going to improve the team. I always say, you know, the Bible is the best book for life, in my opinion. Well, if it works in life, why wouldn't it work on a football field? There's just so many good principles in there, you know, regardless of your faith, that matter. But he's a guy, again, I think has really helped me. And then Rip Shear is the other one. Like I said, he was there through great times in LA, some tough times when I was out. He always stayed in contact. And then again, for a guy like that to give me an opportunity to come over here, I always tell people I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for him, because I wouldn't have went to Madrid, wouldn't have the opportunity in Hungary. This isn't even on the table. So those are two guys for sure that stand out in mind.
Okay. Your favorite stadium?
In the U.S.?
In general?
Heinz Field, it's now AccuSure, but the Steelers Stadium is near and dear to my heart. A couple road stadiums, too. Getting to play in Kansas City every year. Denver, too. There's so many great NFL venues and arenas that are special for that. But, yeah, I think home is where the heart is, and that's the stadium I think that I have many, many memories of. And even when we're young, that was like if you're playing a high school championship game, that's where the championship games would be. So it always had a nostalgia for me from my youth all the way through where I'm at now.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have a game day ritual, and what does it look like?
I don't like getting to the stadium early. It's the worst. You sit around there all day. Night games are the same. It's like, what do you do, right? You just want to get to the game. Having a bye week this year is tough, because you just want to play right after all these practices. But my ritual, you know, I try to be consistent with it, right? Get off the bus, get in the locker room. We usually go out to the field with the guys, do a quick kind of roll call, get back in. I'm all about, you know, giving guys space, because everybody gets ready for a game differently. And then pretty much, you know, I like to be relaxed and at ease, you know. And so to me, it's there's no need to be stressed or right or tight. It's just like, hey, if you're prepared and you're ready to go play the game, good, let the game come. But yeah, usually we get there about 3 hours early, you know, hour and a half or so. It just really is kind of getting settled in, and then you usually start your pregame routine in regards to on the field stuff.
Okay, final question. You've worked with the Chargers for some time. Nowadays, when you watch NFL games, do you still root for the Chargers, or do you have a different favorite team?
So when I worked with the Chargers, you know, growing up, I was a huge Steelers fan. You grew up in Pittsburgh, Western Pennsylvania. I mean, that's, that's who you like. Steelers were very good, you know, too, during my time that I was living there. But then I was coaching in college. And then when I got to the Chargers, right, I couldn't, I watched the Steelers a lot, but I didn't have the affinity, right? Cause they're kind of the opponent with that. That question that you asked me though, it comes back to the people. There were so many people there, you know, from the early years on through, but then when I got let go in 2020, there's a handful of guys that you still root for, and I think I root more for those people that are still playing or coaching now. And every year in the NFL, it's like reshuffle the cards and where do people end up. But I've kind of circled back to the Steelers just because that's my hometown team. I'll always keep an eye on them. But yeah, it truly is the people, because you want, guys to have success. You want to see them win. It's cool too, the opportunities that come with that, but you know, just getting guys that you work with, right. And a guy you work with for a long time that you love and respect, you know, go win a Super Bowl. Like that's awesome. Nick Sirianni did that a couple years ago. Andrew Janoco is now the offense coordinator, with the Raiders. He was in Seattle last season, and it's just like, it's awesome. It's great. You know, I know how hard those guys work and how much they sacrifice. And so, again, for them to reap that reward, it's a true blessing to watch.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for being here today on this episode of podcast. We're really excited. I'm excited to see your journey in Germany and with Rhein Fire. And to everyone listening, thanks for tuning in to Touchdown Duisburg. Und an der Stelle wechseln wir einmal mal wieder kurz zu Deutsch. Wie immer, wenn ihr Fragen, Anmerkungen oder Wünsche für einen nächsten Gast habt, dann schreibt uns gerne entweder über die Radio Duisburg Social Media Kanäle oder an die Mailadresse podcast@radioduisburg.de. Wir hören uns. Bis dahin. Macht's gut.
Dankeschön. Fire!
Das war Touchdown Duisburg, der Rheinfire-Podcast von Radio Duisburg mit Julia Wegner.